Hello and welcome to the Recreation to Recreation podcast, the show where we explore the stories of people who have turned the activity that they love into positive change for our world. My name is Jen, and I'll be your sidekick on this adventure as we treasure hunt for gems of insight and wisdom while exploring the planet with our inspiring guests. For today's adventure, we're heading to the USA, Peru, and beyond with Natalie to explore her world of surfing, therapy, and belonging. Hi, Natalie. How are you today?
Hey, Jen. Dude, it's so good to see you.
It's good to see you, too. I've been very excited about this and obviously honored that you would come on the podcast so we could create this episode together.
Yeah. I know the last time we saw each other, we were in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. Which was also lovely. And we're actually going to talk a lot about water today and just being on the water, in the water, around the water, and how amazingly healing that can be. I usually like to start these episodes just asking you where you are and wondering if you can tell us what it's like there and just get us situated in your world.
Yeah. Currently, I'm in Maui, Bay of Kihei, which is just, I think, south of like Lahaina and that area of Maui. This morning, let's see, outside my window, it's like blue skies, big puffy clouds. It downpoured yesterday and today it's supposed to downpour again, but you would have no idea. Mm-hmm. And morning I joined the local Outrigger Canoe Club, a walk down the beach from where I'm at. And it's all just lovely middle-aged and older people from all over the world that have made Maui home. For me, it's like my little morning dose of sea and just like lovely conversations and getting to hear stories. And in Maui, they do a lot of like, oh, we just get together and talk story. And I feel like that's what my mornings have turned into, is like a good time of talk story on the sea. And this morning we got gifted a little run-in with a dolphin that came up and said hi, and just amazing coral. And yeah, the clarity was amazing this morning. So that's where I'm right now.
Perfect. So wherever our listeners are, we'll just close our eyes and pretend that we're there with you. Yeah, I love that so much. And what a beautiful way to start the day every day in community and conversation.
Yeah. And I feel especially like growing up, athleticism was always the way of interacting with nature. Mm-hmm. And so finding ways that it's really more just like slowing down and being with nature has been like the thing that's been coming in recently. Mm-hmm. And so getting a chance to be with people who have lived for decades more than I have and have lived around the world and experienced different things and are in a different phase and season of life. Mm-hmm. And just getting a chance to kind of be with the ocean rather than like going out and like catching as many waves as possible or swimming as far as possible or like really pushing myself, but moving into that just like, oh, let's just sit here and watch the dolphin cruise by versus trying to like do something with it.
Yeah. And it's amazing. And I mean, I think that's something that we're probably going to end up talking about in this conversation because, you know, I think both of us have lived very busy lives where we've done a lot of different things and had a good period of time where we were both pushing and trying to get lots of things done for the benefit of many people. Mm-hmm. But there comes a point where we almost have to give ourselves permission to slow down. And I think a lot of it comes down to worthiness, honestly, as like a sort of core feeling. I'm worthy just sitting here breathing.
Yeah.
And we spend time with people who are a little bit further along in age, whether they've been forced to slow down because their bodies can't keep up or they are consciously making that decision. I know I spend a lot of time with my grandma, so she physically can't move. And it forced me to slow down, but it also then allowed me to give myself permission to just, as you said, be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the things that my grandma taught me, she passed in the beginning of 2020. Mm. 101 years old.
Wow.
She had this beautiful woods, like 500 acres of woods in South Carolina. And she would just sit in her sun porch every day and watch the birds. And she knew what they were all up to. And just sitting and observing and learning and listening. And it's hard to do that in different phases of life. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like the sit and watch and listen and learn has definitely been, I love that you use the word like permission just to be. It's like, yeah, moving into that space of like, oh, I can actually just be, and that's more than enough.
Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds so simple, and yet. So before we get into, I mean, we've already started and it's beautiful already, but before we kind of get into the big questions, I've got some weird and wonderful questions that I always like to ask. They're always different. And so
bring on the weird. I'm all about the weird.
Me too. So to begin with, what task or chore actually brings you great satisfaction?
Oof. Mm. So I just recently moved. I had been living in Peru for the last 4 to 5 years and moved back to San Diego and have Earth for the first time. Like before being in Peru, every time I was in the States, I was living on a boat. So I just never had Earth. And in Peru, the Earth that we had was desert. And so when I tried gardening there, everyone just like laughed at me. They're like, this is desert. You don't grow things in this sand. But having Earth right now has just been like so much joy. Mm-hmm. And I love weeding. It's like the thing that I guess it's supposed to be annoying, but I absolutely love it. I'll just like put on some music or listen to nothing at all and just get out there and weed. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, but is this a weed or is this something that I want in my garden? And then I'm like saving all the weeds. And I have my little like app that I can take pictures of the things and it tells me what they are. And I'm just like geeking out on all the things. And I just absolutely love it. Getting down on my hands and knees and like looking at all the tiny things. And it's been really, really fun.
That's awesome. I was actually going to say, I have an app for that.
I have an app for that.
I'm the same, but mine is called Plant This. So if you're listening and you also want to love weeding, this app can change your life.
Yeah. Oh, PlantNet. Yeah. Is the one that I'm using.
Awesome.
And it's cool because a lot of things that I assumed were weeds are actually really medicinal and helpful. In the earth space that I'm taking care of, there's a lot of stinging metal and it's just everywhere. And every time I'm like, I love walking barefoot, I'm coastal. And so it like really is annoying and bothers me.
Right.
And then one of my girlfriends is like, don't pull it. Like, you got to dry that and drink that stuff. And I was like, what? But it stings. Doesn't it sting on the way down? And it's just, it's so amazing. And so now I have nettle tea on a regular basis.
That's perfect. There's just so much to learn always. Mm-hmm. Curiosity is key. Well, and talking about apps, thinking about the beautiful story you told about your grandma sitting on her deck in the woods watching the birds. There's an amazing app for bird watching called the Merlin app. You press record and it will listen to all the bird song around you and tell you what birds are around you. Add that one to your list. I try to not be on technology as often as I can, especially when I'm out in nature, because I just want to be fully present. But there are some times where these apps can actually really elevate our experience of being with, and I don't even say like in nature because we are nature, just communing with the rest of us, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And acknowledging that we are nature and it's part of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just did a workshop. So I do like monthly workshops where we invite people to come in and share either their way of connecting with nature or with community and different tools, like mental health tools that support those pieces. And I just interviewed, I'm going to look up the app name so I don't mess it up. So the app's called the Waterways Relaxation app. And I love that because you were bringing in, like, I try not to be on technology, but sometimes, and that was the same conversation we were having. It's like, technology can pull us away from nature, or we can use it really intentionally to like reconnect with the nature within us and around us. Mm-hmm. And she's a fellow art therapy provider. And like the way that our worlds have connected is just wild. But she developed an app, had never developed an app before, no technology, like very like art focused. It was a mindfulness practice that she would do to help herself fall asleep, where rather than like counting sheep or counting down from 100, she would write whatever she was wanting to welcome in into the sand in her mind, and then inhale in the wave coming up and then washing it out, and then writing another thing on the sand and inhaling it, the wave in and washing it out. So she created an app that has that visual and the sound effects of the ocean and the visual of the ocean. And you can actually write in the sand
awesome
on the app. of like, if you're going through something difficult or grieving someone, you could write their name in the sand and then have that visual of the ocean coming up and taking it out to sea. Or if you're struggling with something of just like, why? And like writing that in the sand and letting that come up and letting it away as many times as you need. To practicing it to fall asleep. And I was like, so beautiful. There's so many ways that technology really can be supportive for our nervous systems rather than dysregulating for our nervous systems. And so I love this piece of, yeah, how it brings us back to ourselves and brings us back to nature rather than pulling us away from it. Everything has duality. Everything can be used for good or for bad.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, it actually makes me think about the fact that technology can serve such a purpose because we sit here with such privilege that we have access to nature. And there are so many people that don't have that direct access. And so when we have things like this app that your friend made where they can bring the ocean to them, it is good to think about what are the innovative potentialities of utilizing technology for, as you said, to help us regulate and feel that deeper connection, not just with nature and ourselves, but also each other. Like, how do we actually start to, I think there's a lot of argument that because of technology, we've become disconnected from one another. And yet it's also facilitated connection at a time when we were all separated from one another. So I think we could talk about that for a long time.
Yeah. And even, I mean, this moment right now,
Like
we're able to connect because of technology. And I was trying to think of like the last time that we connected. It's been probably 10 years.
We'd be getting up there. I think did we meet in 2016?
2016 was when Groundswell officially became a nonprofit. Right. Exception was like one of the things that like helped that 2015 or 2014.
Yeah, crazy. Crazy. Much life has been lived in the interim.
Yeah, it's really cool. And without technology, like to be able to reconnect in these moments and share and be like, oh my gosh, look at what you're up to. Let's do this.
Yes.
It just wouldn't happen.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Cool. Yeah, no, we're very fortunate to live in the time that we live. That's for sure. Okay, are you ready for your next weird and wonderful?
Okay, yeah, bring it. Okay.
If you had an unlimited supply of one thing, what would you want it to be?
Ugh. Really clean turquoise water. Salty ocean, clear, clean, just at like not too warm where you don't feel it when you get in, but just enough that it like wakens your body and you just like feel that little zzz in your cells. Yeah, a lot of that would be nice.
Amazing. What is one thing you couldn't live without?
Probably the same. Clean, beautiful, full of life ocean. Yeah. I mean, I feel like wherever I land, that's like the first thing I do is go find the body of water that's closest to get in.
For sure.
And the ocean has brought me my career, my community, my relationships, my love, like everything. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like without water, I'd be curious to see like what my life would be like. I've tried moving away from the water a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it doesn't.
she's always calling you back. I love that. If you could instantly have a new skill, what would it be and why?
A new skill. I wish I could play instruments. Like I grew up playing violin at age 3, but it was never like some people just like naturally flows out of them and they can just jam and get into rhythm. And I have to like really try. But I would love to have the skill of just being able to like pick up a guitar, pick up an instrument and be able to like flow with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whenever someone does that, I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is just like such a gift.
It must feel so good. Mm-hmm. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
It's a good question. That's actually something that I've been trying to figure out and trying to sit with. I think after leaving Peru, I felt I lived in the town of Huanchaco, Peru, which is in kind of like the central northern region of Peru along the coast. And I felt such a huge, like I've never felt community like I felt there. Mm-hmm. But it was like, the desert and cold water and not clear crystal, like clean water. The ocean is the health of the ocean is actually a really big issue there. Mm. So it didn't check off a lot of like those types of boxes, but the community element was just the glue for everything. And then moving back into San Diego, it's like, oh, there's so much more access to all the fun things to do and different beach spaces and mountains and green and desert, like all the different diversity. But the community piece is difficult. Mm-hmm. I luckily have some amazing community in San Diego that I've curated over a really long time, but it's still hard. I feel like life is just busier and moves at a different pace. Mm-hmm. My partner's from San Diego. And so we've just been kind of chatting about like, what are the things that would make the most ideal place? And I think I'm still looking for it.
Yeah.
Right now, being in Hawaii, I'm like, ooh, this is pretty beautiful. The pace of life is sweet. People stop and talk story and are really just all about like connecting and being in nature and moving more slowly mm-hmm. and like different priorities. There's a lot of really rich beauty in the history and the peoples of Hawaii. So yeah, I don't know what the space is yet. Right now, San Diego is home, but I always joke that the place that I would want to die is San Sebastian, Spain, because I studied abroad there and I just loved all of the elderly people would put on their big fur coats and walk holding hands in the afternoons, and people sat in the parks and had their coffees together. Mm. Bay that's perfect for a sailboat, and then like 5-minute walk there's a bay that's perfect for surfing, so it like combines both of my worlds. And the mountains are close by and the nature there is just like so rich. They speak one of the most ancient languages, and so there's a lot of still really alive connection to the ancient culture and traditions and ways of being with earth and water, and the food's amazing,
right? That's always important.
Food's very good. But yeah, I don't know. I'm on the hunt for like where my space is. I think because I've moved around so much, anywhere I am, I'm always missing people. Mm-hmm. And so there's this element of like wherever I am, I'm always home. And wherever I am, I'm always in a feeling of like missing as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's been an interesting journey trying to figure out where home really is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's also okay for it to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the hard part.
Yeah. Yeah. How do we just flow with it? Right.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. And being able to really let go.
Yeah. And just trust that it will also find you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I have one more.
Okay.
What is your favorite thing about yourself?
My favorite thing about me. I'm able to make connections. And so from being able to see, watching nature and how it works together, and then connecting that into like how my life is moving and how I interact and how I am in relationship with things. So really being able to see like the metaphor and the connection and the micro and the macro reflections of each other. Mm-hmm. And so I think that often comes out in my work and in my relationships as being like the dreamer. Like I can see the big picture and vision it and bring it into tangibility. Mm-hmm. Like that's where my energy feels the most alive, is when I'm in those spaces. And then I want someone that can be like really like detail oriented.
That can be quite a challenging question. And so I think it's indicative of the work that you've done and the way that you actually live your life, that you were able to quite comfortably bring that forward. And I just want to nod to that because it's not easy. I think self-awareness is a superpower. And when we do take the time to strip away the things that are not us, all the answers are there. I really just wanted to nod to you that, you know, the ease with which you came forward with that answer, which I'm sure it hasn't always been like that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say even just within the last like 2-3 years have been a big time of like letting the things fall that need to fall and not feeling that need to like do all the things. And that's really a lesson from nature, is like as I observe and watch nature, realizing that one species doesn't do all the things. Mm-hmm. Like it's living in community and every single piece has its part. And when it's focused on doing its thing that it's good at, that it's gifted, that it's made for, all the different species and plants and animals are doing their thing, then everything just flows. Mm-hmm. And I think over the last, since starting Groundswell, and even before that, there was so much pressure that maybe like an overculture pressure or pressure that I put on myself of just like, I had to do it all by myself and I had to be strong and I had to just get it done and mm-hmm. be a strong woman and what that meant and all the definitions and things that came along with that. And then realizing that like, oh my gosh, I don't have to do it all. And when I do it all, I actually get burnt out and I don't do anything really well. Things just start getting dropped and people get hurt and just things happen. Mm-hmm. And so realizing like, oh, I don't need to do all the things and that's okay. That doesn't make me less valued or less important or whatever the things are that I'm trying to puff up into. It's like, actually, this is me and that's great. And I can do my piece and then let other people step up and shine in their pieces versus feeling like I have to do it all on my own.
Yeah.
So that's been a big release and I'm still working on it.
I think it's a lifelong thing. You know, I'm just thinking to myself from one dreamer to another, like imagine if everyone in the world was supported in finding the things that they were naturally good at and could shine at and celebrated for those things. Like what a different world we would live in if that was like a part of how we raised kids and really spent the time teaching them things like regulating your nervous system. I've recently become a meditation teacher and I think to myself, wow, like if I had had these tools at a younger age, and it's not that I wish anything was different because I don't personally believe in doing that, but I would have experienced the world and all of the things that I've done in a very different way. I can't change any of that, but can I in some small way and in the work that you're doing, give people permission to come forward and shine and uncover the truth of who they are, not the things that we think we are.
Yeah. And I've been doing a doula and postpartum training, getting a chance to learn about the different ways of mothering and birthing and being in community, being in village around the world that have been forgotten or are still practiced. There's such a powerful piece of allowing people to support you mm-hmm. and to care for you, and that fills you up so then you can care for them or care for the babe. And this shouldn't just be for birthing moms. It really like how we should live life always is in that collective community space of really allowing ourselves to be held by others. And then that way we can hold others as well. And just noticing how, what are the things that I can really show up in, and then allowing others to show up in their pieces and allowing yourself to be held. And that's definitely been probably like the most tender piece of these last couple of years is as a therapist and doing the work I do, I've been doing a lot of holding and then realizing like, oh, by holding, I'm actually like enabling people from doing their biggest work in this world. And I'm also burning myself out because that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And so really people to hold me, and it's really vulnerable to allow yourself to be seen and heard and held versus being the one that's witnessing and hearing and holding. And so,
mm-hmm. yeah. Oh, I love how we've just dived right in. These were some of like the big key things that I had on my mind of wanting to talk about. So I'm glad that we're already touching on them. Before we do delve any deeper, I would love to just have you maybe tell the listeners a little bit about you in terms of where you grew up and what were you passionate about? Did you always know that you wanted to help people in some way? You know, when you're a kid and you kind of start to feel out, what do I feel like I'd like to do with my time? Mm-hmm. And yeah, let's just get to know you a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, I'm originally from North Carolina. My water lineage is my dad and my granddad. My granddad was a boat salesman. And so he transported boats through like the Amazon in Peru and up and down the coast, and we're based in Louisiana. And so I grew up around boats a lot, around sailing. Sailing was definitely my dad's passion, and he tried to get our family to move aboard a boat multiple times. My mom's side water lineage is a lot of like just being at the beach and boogie boarding and tide pooling and beach and ocean just being a space of like vacation and family and play. And so that was really the energy I grew up around and had access to. And I remember as a kid, like wanting to be an astronaut.
Mm-hmm, same.
And I was just like, I want to be in the unknown.
Totally. And actually, I think in some ways, especially us meeting on the ocean the way that we did, I feel like the ocean is almost like not, I don't want to say a substitute, but it's like the closest we can get to the unknown on planet Earth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think there's some crazy fact. I might be quoting this wrong, but like we know less about the ocean than we do about outer space. And we know less about our brains than we do about outer space. And so I feel like subconsciously becoming a therapist is like, let's get in that unknown.
Totally.
Dive into the subconscious, those areas that we'd have no idea and just the mystery.
Honestly, I mean, I think the greatest adventure I've ever had has been going within, exploring my own inner landscape and trying to come up with some kind of a map for what's going on in there.
And it's not one plane.
No. Yes, they are. They're not as simple as the ones that we use to drive our cars around. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. There's no map quest for that.
No.
But yeah, so I think that I've always had a curiosity and a love for the unknown and mystery. Mm. When my family would go on vacations, and I remember I must have been like 8 or 9, maybe 10, but going on a vacation with my family and putting my foot down and be like, I'm not going on any more vacations unless we are like staying with local people and like hanging out and doing the things that everyone is doing locally. Mm. My dad's a doctor. And so he started looking up medical mission opportunities. And so we ended up going to Vanuatu, and I got to like scrub up at 13 and help my dad with enucleations and like taking eyeballs out and doing amputations. And staying with local families and getting a chance to like eat what they eat, mm-hmm. and learn the language and understand and learn as much as you can within like a little amount of time. And I don't know where that came from. That was just me being like, I'm not going on any more family vacations unless we're like hanging out with the locals and doing what the locals do and eating the local food. And that was it.
Well, I think that kids, they have such an innate wisdom around connection. Because they don't have all of the layers of societal conditioning yet. They can sense, and we would have sensed when we were little, what authentic connection was. Mm-hmm. And I think so often with a vacation, you're not even scratching the surface. You're in very like specific conditions, usually either in resorts, or even if you do go off the beaten track, it's such a limited experience of what it would be to actually live in that place or to just see how people live. What are their traditions? How do they connect? What does that look like? What does it feel like? I think most importantly, and that's what I think as we get older and we start to go, oh yeah, I am craving authentic connection. So we return back to that curiosity we had when we were kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like those little things just like paved the direction of my life in such radical ways that at the time I would have never been like, I'm going to become a therapist and do surf therapy. Like surf therapy didn't, two words that were put together. And so that wasn't something that was on my radar at all. In junior high, I had like a very strong, it's always weird to talk about it because I feel like everyone has their own like spiritual understandings and beliefs, mm-hmm. and connect points. I like heard God speak to me and felt a very strong call to work with people in transition and people that were going through their identification process. And now these are like my therapy words that I'm throwing on there. And junior high would have been like, I want to help teenagers know that they're good.
Totally.
That they're people.
Totally.
And that they're important and learn who they are and figure out who they are. And at the time, the place that I was finding the most safe and supportive space for self-discovery was in the church. My youth pastor was huge for me. And so my family was going through a lot of loss and grief with my aunt passing from breast cancer. And so church became like my second family of really supporting me through that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, this is where you do it. Like, you become a youth pastor and you help youth figure out who they are. And then started going down that path and like, didn't want to go to university. I wanted to go to India and live in India and learn from the people in India and work in communities there. And my family was like, no, you got to go to school. Mm. After school, you can do whatever you want. So I went to school and studied theology, philosophy, and psychology and became a youth pastor. And through that, recognized within that space, I was limited to the capacity of work that I could do. And also realized that with working with youth, you're really working with the whole family unit and the whole community. Right. And so that really like pivoted me towards looking at marriage and family therapy, because with that theory, it's you're not just looking at the individual, you're looking at the community and the things that are supporting that individual and working with the whole unit. And finished school and went to India and started working at a school there and did sex education and helped them like develop a sex education program, which was like a full on like, you know, nothing experience of like going in and being like, oh, I learned all these things in school. I know all this stuff. And then coming in and be like, thanks.
Humbled.
Yes. And I really think all of the different communities and places that have welcomed me in as community and as family have been like, those have been my biggest teachers, those individuals and those families and those community spaces and cultures. Like the stuff that I learned in school, just kind of, it's like science and spirit just kind of like actually prove each other right. And so it felt like that with like living in different places, all the things that I was experiencing was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, at like deeply feeling it and knowing it. And then being in school was more of like, okay, this is the terminology you use to talk about it and the research that supports what you already deeply know. Mm. It's been interesting to feel myself kind of like push and pull between the two. And now I'm like, as I'm saying this, oh, and I'm getting interviewed to start my PhD program this week, feeling that back and forth between the deep knowing and experiencing of something and then also wanting to have the science and the like, academic knowledge mm-hmm. to be able to support it. And maybe that's part of my like needing to have approval and feel valued in the work that I'm doing. So that way it's not just seen as like, oh, this is a cute little hippie thing, but no, this is real, and wanting to be able to speak both languages in it.
It's just making me think about being human. You know, we're spiritual mm-hmm. beings having a human experience. And so in many ways, having that deep knowing is your connection to the mystery, the unknown, whatever people like to call it. It's whatever is God of their own understanding, but also recognizing that we are having, you know, a grounded physical experience here. And in order to do that, there are systems that exist. And it doesn't mean that we have to always work within them. In fact, we can innovate through that deep knowing and sort of work outside the box and come up with new ways of doing things. But there's nothing wrong with also just being very grounded in your body and grounded in being human and having to navigate that push and pull of science and spirit, which is really what we're here to do, is just to explore and experience things and hopefully expand towards a better way of being.
Yeah. That's what I love surfing right now, is because I think that there's so many opportunities to learn how to surf through lessons and the like technical side of this is step one, step two, step three.
Yeah.
And people have been surfing for a really long time before surf schools even existed. Uh-huh. And they learned through just being in water and playing with the waves and bringing different things into the waves to see how it interacts and how they work. And so in our surf therapy programs, like the first 2 to 3 sessions aren't even with a surfboard. It's just all about like getting in ocean and experiencing the waves and playing with them and listening to them and seeing what they're inviting your body to do and doing that and wiping out and just really learning through trust, learning to trust your body again mm-hmm. and stepping into the unknown of the ocean and interacting and seeing what evokes from that space. It's interesting to see how like there's so many people that come in that brain of like, but I need like step one, step two, step three. I need to know how, I need you to tell me what to do, versus like, actually, I already have everything I need within me. I already know, and just trusting that versus like trying to get someone else to tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like finding those edges. And we talk about this a lot in child development and the doula work, is we need those edges to push up against. Mm-hmm. And so we need to know like, ooh, this is that boundary. And okay, let's push up against that and see how we can expand it and how we can think beyond that boundary or beyond that box. Mm-hmm. And if there's no box, then there's like, phew, who knows?
Right.
But having that box is important.
Yeah. When I think about recreation to recreation, it's we can have such, I was talking about it earlier, this like suction cup, this limited mm-hmm. view of what recreational activities are. But in my mind, they are spaces of transformation when they are partnered with people that have innovative minds who are willing to flip the script and say, hey, this actually is a portal for so much more. And I know from being a water sports coach for over a decade, especially paddleboarding has been like a big part of my life. Getting people on the water in a way that, as you said, they're coming up against these edges, the discomfort, and getting used to being comfortably uncomfortable. And how do we then help people to navigate through that fear of the unknown and realize that there's an innate wisdom in us that we have? And when that actually having the experience of the societal conditioning and feeling disconnected from your body and even from your heart and who you truly are is part of that process. And that facilitators like yourself are just one of many ways that people can come back home to themselves and strip away all the things that we pick up along the trail of life. Just hearing you talk about it, I'm like, this is why I started the podcast, because we tend to have such a limited view of like, oh yeah, I like to go and run. Oh yes, I like to surf. I like to do this. I genuinely believe that recreational activities hold such a huge potential for people to transform their lives when they're viewed from a completely different perspective. So thank you for just validating that for me as I, you know, sit here talking to you. Just, it's so nice.
So one of the creatures that has been teaching me a lot over this last year has been the dragonfly. Mm-hmm. Their journey is so similar to, I feel like, the journey that I'm like consistently cycling through. But this, like, they start off as just these like little water larva beings, and they don't know what's above the surface, that water line. And then at some point their cellular being just starts shifting and changing and transforming to where they can break above that water line and fly. And it's like just thinking of ourselves as these like little water larvae little beings, having no idea that there's even another way of doing life, that there's anything beyond that little waterline surface. And then all of a sudden you go through this transformation and now you can fly and you have like a whole another world that you have access to. Mm-hmm. I feel like that has been this ongoing process. I have people ask me like, what's your 5-year plan? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I can't even like be like, oh, in 5 years, this could probably happen. And this is what I would like to see happen. But I don't want to put a water line on what's possible, because my brain is limited to what I know right now.
Absolutely.
And to be able to acknowledge, like, who knows what's possible, because it's beyond our brain's current capacity to imagine.
100%. I was actually listening to an interview with Sadhguru the other day. I don't know if you've come across him, but he has the Isha Yoga Center in India, and they're now all over the world. But he said, I hope your dreams don't come true, because your dreams are limited by what mm-hmm. you know. So it's exactly what you were saying. And I really want to talk about the holding space that you mentioned earlier, because I think that this is such a huge part of, you know, both of our lives in very different ways. But talking about holding space for people who are in transition, and now that you're doing your doula training, and we were just talking about the fact that I'm looking into doing my death doula training. Like, we're facing unknown all the time. And I think what happens is we latch on to things in the outer world, thinking that they're going to provide us with safety and security. But actually what that does is it means that we don't feel safe within our own bodies, and we don't feel safe being with ourselves. It's why we tend to distract a lot. We get on our phones. We, you know, get busy doing things. Like we were talking about earlier, the push, the doing, I've got to get all of this done. And we're looking for, you know, some kind of safety and security, but that processes like this and holding space for people and for ourselves too, to come back to that safety within, is such an integral part of the life process. And for some, that might happen early on. They might be able to come as a teenager on one of your sessions and have that transformation at that stage, which would be absolutely amazing. But for some, it might be when they have their first child. Or for some, it might be like the work that I'm doing, which is helping someone transition from living to the other side, which is really, for all intents and purposes, the ultimate unknown. But isn't it kind of cool that along the way of living, we can be slowly preparing ourselves for that ultimate unknown and not be afraid of it? In fact, in some ways, you could say like life is actually training you to die, because it is just a constant process of letting go of the things that we're not. I know, I love these kinds of conversations.
I love this stuff.
Exactly, we're both jazzed. But I love what you were saying earlier too about the holding space. And that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because this is something that you don't have to be a therapist in order to hold space for people. In fact, we do it all on a daily basis in the relationships that we have. Personally, the greatest gift that we can actually give another human is our presence, is just being with them and in full acceptance of who they are in that moment. That's really what I've come to realize in the last few years of actually doing therapy myself, and that connection that you can have with someone, that deep listening and full acceptance, non-judgment, just allowing people to be exactly who they are in that moment. And that can be very challenging at times, for sure. But it really is the greatest gift that we can give. But how do we allow then ourselves to be held in return? And I find that pretty crunchy a lot of the time. And I think what you were talking about earlier about being the sort of like strong, independent woman, in the period of time where I was like busy doing a million things, setting up, you know, businesses or initiatives, running programs, I called it living a mile wide and an inch deep rather than an inch wide and a mile deep. And now I'm trying to transition to the latter. But part of that is really actually living kind of in our masculine, which is this, the yang energy of like doing and achieving. And it's not a bad thing, but there has to be a balance. We met on an all-female expedition, mm-hmm. which, having those experiences, you know, even though it was a decade ago now, I think I would have experienced them very differently had I been who I am now. If I could go back and experience them again, I think they actually would have been even more powerful for me, because I'm now trying to understand what it means to allow myself to just be. And that's the sort of feminine energy of receiving and allowing and letting other people care for you. And, you know, that can be a really hard thing to do.
Yeah. Ugh, there's so many different pieces in there. There's the pieces that I've been working on and really spending time with has been, I tend to go towards like beating myself up mode, like, oh, like I should have known better. I shouldn't have allowed myself to get burnout, or like, oh, I should have done this. And, or being like, why don't I have the same energy that I used to have? And I used to be able to multitask and do all these things, and now I can't do those things anymore. And realizing, one of my really dear teachers and friends, Shannon Thompson, who recently passed, she was a big teacher of mine in embracing the seasons. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I thought she was just talking about like the annual seasons right. that are happening every year. I'm like, I need to winter more. I'm like, I know, Shannon, I need to be in winter. But then it was like, oh, the seasons of actual life. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, that season was my maiden season, where I was in spring. I was in this time of just like planting all the seeds and seeing what was going to grow and learning and just like being out there and doing. Mm-hmm. And then now I feel myself shifting into the mothering season, where it's really like honing in and curating and nurturing. Mm-hmm. And just both seasons are beautiful, and both seasons have their strengths and their learnings and their power. And it's not like one season is better than the other, but I think, I know I live in a culture where the maiden season is the one that's most glorified. Right. And it's like seen as being productive and successful. And if you're, these are the Instagram things that I'm like, ooh, like you're being able to post like, oh my gosh, I did all these things in one day. Look how productive I was. Mm-hmm. I did like, and I went to yoga and I got my Excel spreadsheet done. And then I was like, whoa, like, yeah, that energy is amazing to have that capacity in that season. And my capacity and my energy in this season is just as beautiful and just as amazing, and finding ways to like really embrace it rather than be like, oh, I'm getting older. Oh, I can't do what I used to do. But more like, oh, but what can I do here? Mm-hmm. And it's just really, I feel a big pulling into like nurturing. And actually right now I'm running a surf therapy program for moms who lost their home in the fires of Lahaina. Mm-hmm. And the first session we just talked, there was a lot of honoring our water lineage and those that have come before us that are bringing us to this moment where we can access the water in the ways that we do, and how we want to pass that on the generations that are coming from us. But especially with motherhood, and I think just being a human, this experience of like, we are just constantly giving and giving and giving and giving, and how to let any moment that we're giving, how is that moment also an opportunity to receive, and how am I receiving in that space? And so actually one of the practices, one of the embodiments that we do, we call it Waves of Love. Mm-hmm. And it was done by one of my teachers, Ruth U. Peterman, who I got to co-facilitate first aid arts training workshops around the world with her, where we like went into different places that had just had natural disasters like the tsunami in the Philippines, to safe houses in Seattle and Mexico and LA that were helping women getting out of trafficking or abusive relationships, and teaching how to utilize the arts for trauma recovery for both therapists as well as community members and the house moms. And so I've adapted it to be more ocean and watery focused, because that's my element. Mm-hmm. And just this honoring, and I love that you touched on it in the beginning, like we are nature. And so our bodies are the same percentage of water as this earth is in the first almost year of our life in a watery womb that's the same salinity as the ocean. Mm-hmm. And so we are just these little mother earths walking around on a big mother earth. And I like to see our hearts as the ocean. And it's literally pumping these rivers of life that go throughout our bodies that allow us to think and create and dance and move and connect. And when we are sitting in circle, it can be so easy to, as someone shares, to be like leaning in and like hopping into like, oh, I have a solution, or I have a story, or respond quickly, right, and give solutions and try to fix it. Mm-hmm. And being able to sit back when we're in those spaces and just simply being able to be like, I see you, I hear you, and I honor you. I'm not here to fix you. Yeah. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm not here to change you. Mm-hmm. I'm here just to you and hear you and honor you. And so we do that like as an embodiment of just like pushing little waves of love out from our heart to that other person's heart. And that like, I see you, I hear you, and I honor you. And that's holding that moment of just like stillness and silence. You're being received. The trickiest part in these spaces, like you're getting those waves of love, of honor, of I see you, I hear you, I'm witnessing you, sent to you, but you actively have to embody receiving them. And that's the piece that I like, you can see people like trying to dodge the wave.
Totally. Actually, I'm
not making eye contact.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's the work, is to be able to sit there and receive. No, like, oh, but I don't deserve it. Or, oh, there's no like stepping back out of that. It's just like sitting there and being able to be like, yeah, I am seen. Mm-hmm. I am heard. Mm-hmm. And I am honored. And I don't need to be fixed.
Yeah.
I'm just seen and heard, and I'm honored, and being able to like really embody that and feel that. And that's the hardest part. Everyone's like, yeah, sending out the waves of love so easily. But then the receiving is the edge where I'm like, I like call people out all the time. I'm like, hey, receive it. Yeah. And they're like, oh, dang.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point, is nothing's broken. Mm-hmm. Nothing's broken. We just have labels and stories that we're telling. That's all.
Yeah.
Well, and I remember actually you doing that exact practice on the boat when we were together. Mm-hmm. And I was one of those people that was like squiggling in my seat, I look forward to an opportunity to come and be a part of one of your sessions again, because I would like to think that I've come along a little bit further and that I would be far more open to receiving. But it's work. It's work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the whole point. Yeah, it's just to, and also to not be afraid of doing that work, at looking at these things within ourselves that they're not broken. And that's the space of our greatest transformation, is actually the places where we think we're quote unquote broken is actually where we have the greatest space to grow and to learn about ourselves. So yeah, I love that you talked us through that, because I have a very clear, beautiful memory of sitting on the ocean with you and 13 other women, and you
just being completely awkward.
All of us going like squirming in our seats. I've just got a couple more things that I would love to cover if you're good. I think because both of us have created our lives around water, and we have worked directly with people on water, in water, around the water, and we know how healing it can be. What do you think it is about water itself that holds so much potential for us to just be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is where I can go into the like the sciencey facts about negative ions and and cultures have been coming to water around the world, especially ocean waters, since cultures began. And so the ocean has throughout cultures around the world been a space of healing, of grieving, of connecting. There's the book Blue Mind that goes through a lot of like the science and the pieces of like, why are we called towards water? And from like people wanting to, that live in the middle of the country, wanting to move towards the coast and coastal regions being more expensive because everybody wants to be there. And like, what is it that's in our human nature that's drawing us towards the water, especially the ocean? And I think through my lived embodied experience, I'll speak from that because you can read all the science. I think it is this piece of being on the edge of the unknown and the mystery that the ocean calls us into. It is death and birth, birth and death. Like, it's those edges that we are pushing up against. And the ocean provides a very clear like edge of like, ooh, we don't, like, that's beyond us. And this desire to like push up against those edges and break through. And then there's the piece of coming home. We all spent those first 9 or so months, salty solution, salty water in the womb. And so even if we have currently lived in this lifetime traumas around drowning or experiences in the ocean that brought up fear, or you watched Jaws too many times as a kid, whatever those things are that are like, I almost want to say that it's like the white water fear that's on the surface. There's this deeper experience of coming home, of being safe, of being held. When we go into the ocean, our body feels salt water holding it. Our cellular being remembers being held in salt water. Mm. So even if there is the fear on the surface, there's a deeper knowing of I'm home here. For me, those are those embodied and experienced knowings around ocean water. And the ocean regulates us. Like, it invites us to match it, to flow with it, to regulate with it. From just going to the ocean and breathing, like our heart rate and our breath naturally start regulating with the pace of the ocean. It brings you into all of your senses. And so oftentimes when we're experiencing anxiety or depression or trauma triggers, it's bringing us out of this present moment. And as soon as your feet touch the ocean, it like boom, pulls you into the present. Even just thinking about the ocean, that's what I love about the app that I mentioned in the beginning. Like, just thinking about the ocean, you can know like, oh, what does it taste like? What does it smell like? What are the smells of the ocean? What are the sounds of the ocean? What's the temperature of the ocean? What's the movement of the ocean? Like, it, you just by thinking about it, your brain and your body starts getting activated around it and coming into that experience of being nature and remembering that we are nature and we are part of it. So I think there's so much there. I just encourage, like, if you do have fears around waterways and bodies of water, to find people that help you feel safe to engage with them in the ways that you can. Because as we heal our relationship with the water, we're also healing our relationship with our bodies. And when we're healing our relationship with our bodies, we're also healing our communities. Uh-huh. And so there's this intergenerational healing that's happening, this earth healing that's happening, this internal healing that's happening. And so finding those people or those places that evoke safety so that way you can get in and be.
Oh, there's so much there. I just loved listening to that. And it really made me think about a couple of different things. One being, you know, how we were talking about the discomfort we feel in being received and held by other people. And this is how I feel when I'm out in nature, is there's no expectations on me. Mother Nature has no expectations, and she doesn't need me to be anything other than I am. And so when we go out into nature, as in be with what we actually are, there's this natural acceptance. She is the ultimate giver, and yet she's also the ultimate receiver. Mm-hmm. And I think that I can speak to the discomfort I felt when you ran that program of receiving the love from other people. I've never felt that discomfort in nature. I think it's truly realizing that there is no separation, that all of the people around you, they are also nature. We're all one. I can imagine the programs that you run and healing that as ocean health and our own health. We can then take steps towards recognizing and allowing other people to hold us, especially if we've gone through experiences where that hasn't always been safe. So it's a beautiful step in the direction of wider healing when we can allow nature to hold us in the way that it always has, just being conscious of the fact that it's always holding us, even when we don't think it is. And that's what I love about the ocean, is you were talking about with the app. No matter where we live on the planet, every second breath we take comes from the oceans. So it doesn't matter where you are still connected to the ocean, regardless of where you live. And I love that fact. I don't live by the ocean, but I live by the Great Lakes. And so I'm very fortunate in that I am around water and the healing properties of water, just being it near it, hearing it, although I can't smell salty air because of fresh water, but knowing that I'm always connected is such a powerful thing for me to know. It's a deep knowing, right? Like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. And I love this piece around, it's an invitation to reclaim and build healing relationships. And so I like to think of the ocean as holding up with this mirror so we can really see ourselves. So she's a reflection of us, we're a reflection of her. And there's a lot of work around, like, lots of cultures consider the ocean as mother or as feminine. And there's so many like wounds between mothers and daughters and between the feminine, so, or between sisters. And so being able to go into the ocean and build a relationship of where you're allowing yourself to be held by her and you're also holding. And so being able to be in those spaces and rebuild, and you're literally like I like to see every single wave is this opportunity to build new neurological pathways in the brain towards resiliency, because every single wave is an invitation to fall and wipe out and try again and to be seen and witnessed in that versus trying to hide it. When you wipe out on a wave, everybody sees it.
Totally. Well, and we're so, you know, as we get into adulthood, we're so afraid to fail. We're so afraid, but like, you know, we weren't afraid as kids. We knew if I'm learning to walk and I fall down, I just get back up and try again. We weren't afraid to do that. And so I think
skinny knees are normal.
Yeah. And just
like, skinny knee, what's going on?
Yeah. You know, being a beginner at things was so natural. And we tend to forget that as we get older. But I have sort of one last question, and then we're going to wrap up here because I know you're going to present to the Rotary Club. But when I think about healing and wanting to heal, such a big conversation to be had, and it comes in so many different shapes and forms, and what works for you doesn't work for another person necessarily. But I know that for me, my healing journey has really been about coming back to feeling safe with myself, And that feeling of coming home, that I can't explain it better than just saying it's a homecoming. And I know that the journey that I've been on to do that has meant that my creativity and my curiosity has skyrocketed, because I think when we do feel safe, we remember who we are and that we are creators and that we're here to innovate and connect and just discover. I'd love to hear just from you, what do you think is the reason why we go on healing journeys?
I mean, the first thing that comes to me is to feel alive and to connect with our joy and who we are. And I think that's one of the gifts that I've really loved about both getting to provide surf therapy, as well as when I'm providing surf therapy, I'm also receiving the gifts of the ocean.
Right.
Oftentimes when we think of doing healing journeys and trauma therapy and all of this stuff, it can sound like a lot of work, and it can sound really heavy and hard and dark and just, ugh. And when we get a chance to do it, to do that journey with community and with nature, there can be this joy that is experienced during it, even if it's just like this little drop in the middle of like a crazy hectic ocean that we don't have control over. But then there's this little drop of joy of like, oh, but I just like felt myself fly on a wave, or I just felt the water tingle my cells, or I just saw a dolphin jump, or I just wiped out and had snot coming out of my my nose and all over my face. Yep. And I laughed. But it's the first time I've laughed in years, because I've been living with depression. And so being able to bring joy back into the healing journey, and being able to have that, both the joy and the struggle and the hardship, but recognizing that that is possible as we're doing our healing work. And especially when we welcome in it being held within community and within nature, it just doesn't feel as heavy.
Yeah.
Like we don't have to hold it by ourselves. And I think that's like, as you're doing your death doula work and I'm doing my birth doula work, those are things that all humans are going to be doing. And the current culture that I'm in, those are spaces that have been really closed off,
right,
and done in a very sterile non-nature space and without community around.
Right.
So to be able to bring community and nature back into those spaces and back into our healing spaces, like most people, if you go to a therapist and it's in an office and it's private, everybody knows that you're doing it. You try to like pretend you're going to the gym, not to your therapist.
Yeah. Yeah, no, a lot of people do.
Yeah. The community space.
Yeah. Well, and I love that. And yes, as we said, you know, birth and death are the two things we're guaranteed to succeed at. So why do we shy away from things and make them so disconnected and yeah, and hidden? I love what you were saying there. And also that, you know, healing isn't an outcome. It's just a part of the entire experience of being alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd almost say, like, rather than healing, it's like we're learning how to live again.
Right. Yeah. Rediscovering our aliveness that we forgot. Oh, this has been such a beautiful conversation. Natalie, thank you so much. I love this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Next time we'll have to do it in the sea.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes, please. So I do have one final question, which I gave you a heads up on. But I've been asking everyone this question, and it's been really wonderful because there's just such diverse answers. And that's what I love about being human, is that we all see the world in such a different way. So I'd love to ask you, what do you think is the meaning and purpose of life, the universe, and everything?
didn't we just
cover that?
Yeah. And I'm like, and this is like what I went to school for. Theology, philosophy, and the people have sat around in circle and debated this the entire existence of humanity.
Yep.
And I think for me, what's been really coming in lately is the point of life is to live it and to experience it and to be present in it. And all the other things will just naturally take place and happen that need to happen. The point of life is to live it, I guess. I don't know.
I think that's a great answer. Very succinct. So just before we...
Meanwhile, people are writing like books and books and books in libraries. Stop reading the books. Just go live it.
One line. That's all it takes. But isn't that the way, right? Like we try to analyze and go so detailed on things. And sometimes we do just, as I said, take that suction cup off and just go and live it. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. It's so much easier than it has been. We make it.
So this month, we are obviously donating to your cause, which is the Groundswell Community Project. So I wondered if you could just briefly tell us how best we can support Groundswell and what that looks like and how can people get involved?
Yeah. So Groundswell Community Project is a nonprofit that's based in San Diego, but we have branches and communities that we support around the world. So one of the branches is down in Peru, another in Scotland. And then we've been doing trainings in surf therapy. We're actually the first organization to provide accredited trainings by a therapy association in surf therapy. And so when I first started doing this work, I didn't call it surf therapy because I was nervous about getting my license taken away as a therapist. And now we are in this phase and season where there's research being done. We're providing trainings in surf therapy. I have baby therapists and interns that are coming and joining our team to learn how to do surf therapy. So it's a really exciting time in the development of transforming the healing journey into the living journey and back into nature and back into community. And surf therapy is just one modality of a way to do that. And it's an exciting time in Groundswell because I've recognized that I don't have to wear all the hats. I've stepped down as executive director. Now I'm focusing on the clinical director role of supervising our therapists and interns and really working on the development of surf therapy and expansion of it and nurturing of it. And so we are in the process of hiring an executive director and hiring a team to continue carrying her beyond what I can imagine and dream of. And one of the things that I really want Groundswell to be a space of is not just providing healing spaces for women out in the community, but for our internal systems and team to also be a healing space. And there's a long, deep culture of women who work within their heart field not getting paid and valued for the time and the energy and the resources that they're bringing in. And so I really want to be able to offer valued competitive wages and support for the staff of our team. And so that's something that we're really putting a lot of energy and time into, to be able to offer health insurance and wages where they can actually pay rent and not have to work five jobs right, like I've been doing. And, those little things. And so that's one of the pieces that we're doing. And then our surf therapy trainings and development of that. And so we've been doing mainly online, thanks to COVID. I would have never been let's do online trainings with somatic experiential eco-based therapies. And I'm oh my gosh, you can actually do this because we are nature. So it's all coming with us, whether we're in the virtual space or in the outdoors nature spaces. But really putting some energy into, I feel like all of that was just built as the ship was sailing. And so this year we're coming back into harbor and taking time to intentionally build and develop the trainings to be able to best support the growing field and the community, looking at getting a platform in place that way people can access the trainings recorded as well as in person, and just really building that out and making sure that it's accessible for everyone. So we have both people that pay for the trainings and services, so people that are running surf retreats, surf camps and surf schools, to people that are working nonprofit, community-based, community development spaces. And so making sure that all peoples that are interested in this work have access to it from around the world. And so being able to provide good scholarship funding to be able to help increase access to those things.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I remember just one little final bit, because I was just thinking about that hesitation to go online, and the pandemic, I think, forced a lot of, especially for these types of things that are so much about being together, regulating together, right? It's not just about regulating our own nervous system, but regulating together. And when I did my meditation teacher's training, which was completely online, I remember my teacher saying, "Don't worry, love pierces the screen." So thank you so much. It's amazing to think that we're, going on a decade of knowing each other, and it's wonderful to reconnect and have all of that life lived in between. And actually, I think our paths have come closer together since we first met. That's what I'm always hoping with these episodes, is that people can see that you cannot talk to people for such a long time, and then you can reconnect and you realize, wow, I think if we are actually doing the work and living in our authenticity, that there's always going to be crossover.
The same journey.
Yeah. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you. Thank you for curating the space, for holding this space. And it sounds like this is a space that like you get held in as well and get filled up in as well. And so I love that. And so thank you for doing it.
This month's Recreation donation is in support of the Groundswell Community Project. As you now know from exploring with Natalie and I in this episode, her not-for-profit aims to create a safer, braver, and more inclusive space for individuals and communities around the globe to reclaim their healing power and belonging through surf therapy. Groundswell is the first organization to provide accredited training in trauma-informed surf therapy, supporting clinicians, surf coaches, and water folks of all kinds to help over 3,000 individuals in their communities in over 15 countries so far. Whether you can volunteer your time, money, or your voice, we hope you'll head over to our Patreon page to find out the different ways that you can support their unique version of Recreation for the World. Please take the time to let us know what the stories we explored in this episode meant to you. And if you do take action to support this month's cause, thank you. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Recreation to Recreation. If you or someone you know has a unique and inspiring story to tell, make sure to reach out so we can share it with the world. Until next time, keep happy, keep healthy, and keep exploring.